Paper 13, section 3, which is old single column, page 149. Okay, so they give us another little, you know, couple more tidbits here about the deeply mysterious worlds of the eternal sun. And before we read that first little paragraph, let me just reread for you what they said at the beginning so you remember what they're referring to. So let's see, that's, so I guess that's 1, 2, 3, 4, the fourth paragraph up there at the beginning of the paper in the preface. Let me just remind you of, well, when we talked about the worlds of the eternal sun, that we spent a little time making sure that we really appreciated what they were saying there in that paragraph, that the worlds of the S-O-N are S-U-Ns. You know, they're literally radiating orbs. They're not balls of gas like our sun, you know, or this typical star. I mean, they have a surface, but but these are very much the suns for the whole central universe domain. Okay? And there's two different luminosities in play. So let me just read that and remind you again. Okay, so on the seven sacred worlds of the eternal sun, there appear to take origin the impersonal energies of spirit luminosity. No personal being may sojourn on any of these seven shining realms. With spiritual glory, they illuminate all paradise and Havona, and they directionize pure spirit luminosity to the seven super universes. Okay, so on the one hand, remember, spirit's a substance, and you just like you have photons for illuminating things here in the material domain, like how this room is illuminated. Okay, there's literal, is a literal form of spirit energy. You know that serves the purpose of illuminating things. You know, in terms of the spirit substance. So it's just as literal as this. You know, in order for me to see this table, something has to, hit it, interact with it, come up and strike my eye, and then my mind processes all of that, and has to interact in a detailed way so that, the way it interacted, in this spot that's dark is different than the way it interacted in that spot that's light, and, it has to very much be of the nature of what's being illuminated. So they're telling you with spirit substance, it's the same way. You literally need illumination involved in seeing, with those spirit substance eyes, if you will. So on the one hand, you have that, so it's not spiritual luminosity, it's literal spirit substance luminosity. Okay, so that's the one, but that's not the only way in which they're SUNs. There's also that other thing. Oh, and note that with that, it not only illuminates the whole central universe in spirit luminosity, but also paradise. And that goes out and illuminates the seven super universes too. Okay. So the spirit luminosity, is very much a universal distribution. Okay. But the other luminosity. Okay, these brilliant spheres of the second circuit likewise emit their light without heat, to paradise and to the billion worlds of the seven circuited central universe. So there's also a physical emission. It's not just the spirit energy emission. There's a physical energy emission. So they're radiant suns in that way, too. It's this very stabilized type of energy, material energy, like you have in the central universe. This, it isn't like we know physical matter out here where you have atoms that have a nucleus and then there's an electron, a system about that nucleus, and you have this positive, negative charge component that's related to that relationship between the nucleus and that system of electrons. It's the matter there is not dual like it is out here, and it also doesn't have that positive, negative component. It's all this very much unified threefold energy system. So instead of having twofold and the third fold becoming the positive negative system, there it's all together in this very integrated threefold system of material energy. So, these quote unquote central universe photons or whatever the heck we want to call the components of this light without heat, are a threefold energy fact, in some way that, I certainly can't deduce yet. But it's that all the material, all the physical stuff in there is this threefold energy system. So you don't have the kind of oscillating photon thing that we have where and it hits something. It not only serves as this illuminating vector, but it has this oscillatory character that deposits, heat-like, random-like energy into what it, is absorbed or reflected off of, and so it not only our kind not only gives light but also light with heat. You have this stable thing there, so it doesn't do the heat part; it just does the interacting and illuminating, in terms of the material. And again, you notice I was saying, it's part of this threefold energy system. Otherwise, it wouldn't work as an illuminating means. It has to interact with what it's trying to, what's going to be illuminated. It has to be like it. This, the stuff that it's going to illuminate is this threefold energy system. So it has to be like it. It has to be able to interact differently with all the minute variations of that matter. So it has to be like it. Okay? So, and in that one, see, they just say that it illuminates the central universe and paradise. It doesn't shine out through the dark gravity bodies and illuminate directly out here, like the spirit luminosity did. Okay? All right, so with that pretext, then you kind of, aren't quite so puzzled about what they say in this little paragraph to start this section. So let's get that.
Three, the sacred worlds of the eternal sun. The seven luminous spheres of the eternal sun are the worlds of the seven phases of pure spirit existence. These shining orbs are the source of the threefold light of paradise and Havona, their influence being largely but not wholly confined to the central universe.
Okay, notice, they slipped in one additional little twist. Okay, well, couple, actually, they specifically, spoke of this light without heat as threefold light. I think, it's part of this threefold energy system. So that tells you that they're not talking about the spirit luminosity, they're talking about the physical luminosity. It's that threefold light. Of paradise and Havona, it's like, that's what they said up there. But then they say their influence being largely, but not wholly, confined to the central universe. Okay, what are they referring to there? Later on, as they continue to talk about stuff, they slip in a couple other comments about this type of physical luminosity, this light without heat. Most significantly to this issue of largely but not wholly, the headquarters worlds of every super universe. So you have these seven headquarters worlds, and for the seven super universes, each of those headquarters systems, you know, with the primary world and the satellites and sub-satellites, the whole complicated system, you know, each of those headquarters worlds, they tell you that that system is illuminated by a special kind of a star, that there's a star for that system that emits light without heat. It's not a normal star like we, you know, like we have at the center of our solar system, you know, a twofold energy system, normal sort of star, you know, we've come to understand. Okay. There's an actual star, there are actual stars out here, you know, and they don't give you much details, like, well, how, I mean, are these things constructed then or what, you know? You don't know exactly what the scoop is, but they tell you point blank that they're, you know, that at the very least there's seven of them that illuminate those super universe headquarters. And that's what they're referring to here. There's another spot where they tell us that in some way that they don't give the details of, the power beings are serving as some kind of a conduit to bring this light without heat out from the sun's worlds and into these stars that illuminate the headquarters of the super universes.
Who's doing that?
The power beings, you know, the supreme power centers, you know, most, you know, intimately.
So they're not going through the dark gravity.
Right. See. Right, there's a conduit, there's sort of a, you know, a backdoor way somehow, basically. It's not just, you know, beaming out like that spirit luminosity is just bathing everything. There's some sort of a, you know, fiber optic, yeah, right. There's some sort of a conduit, you know, that those power beings, you know, with the seven supreme power directors, it would be the root of this, you know, on the periphery of paradise. And, you know, they're synced to the seven worlds, you know, in the paradise circuits. So there's some means that they don't reveal that this gets conducted out and then shines forth from these central points that they've constructed, modified, whatever. So that's, you know, that's what's being, you know, there's sort of getting a question mark forming in your mind here, and then you want to keep reading. You know, it's like, well, I wonder if there's anywhere else in the book where they explain that. You know, and there's a couple other spots where they give you a couple more details. One about these stars that emit light without heat, and then one about the power beings. Okay, so, you know, it's a very, you know, curious thing. My guess would be that, you know, we wouldn't see such a luminosity. I didn't think we would have any relationship to that physical, you know, I mean, because they basically tell you if they carted you to Havona, you know, you wouldn't experience anything, because you don't have any relationship to the energy there, even the physical energy there. So, you know, I don't think anyone's going to see some curious, star at the center of the Milky Way, you know. I would highly doubt that this is something that we can detect, this light without heat, you know, because it's not our kind of energy somehow modified. It's not like they're taking photons and doing something to them so they don't have this oscillating heat delivering, you know. This is a totally different, you know, this is Havona energy. So okay, so there's one little tidbit. What else did they give us here?
Personality is not present on these paradise satellites. Therefore, is there little concerning these pure spirit abodes which can be presented to the mortal and material personality? We are taught that these worlds teem with the otherwise than personal life of the beings of the eternal sun. We infer that these entities are being assembled for ministry in the projected new universes of outer space. The paradise philosophers maintain that each paradise cycle, about 2 billion years of Urantia time, witnesses the creation of additional reserves of these orders on the secret worlds of the eternal sun.
Now that's a really interesting little, you know, there, I mean, something that's synchronized with the respiration. Very curious. You know, because, you know, even for the revelators, the whole, you know, respiration phenomenon is, it's intimately observed and you know, recorded, understood from that sense, but understood in a, you know, in a causal way? No. I mean, you know, they don't really know what's really behind it or anything. But see, the paradise philosophers are looking for clues, you know, and they've got some sort of way of sleuthing that apparently has this linkage to the generation of these beings and the 2 billion year cycle. So that's obviously telling us something about, you know, what that cycle is tied to. Some very transcendent thing, obviously, if it's linked to these beings that, you notice they, remember when we talked about these beings before, you know, they, well, I guess we could call them super personal. You know, here they're just saying otherwise than personal. You know, and they say beings, and then they say entities. You know, it's, you know, there sort of really isn't words to properly describe them. They're not like anything that, you know, even the revelators, you know, yeah, understand.
Can't even stencil that.
But
they're making sure we're sufficiently confused so that we don't imagine we know what they're talking about.
Well, I mean, I mean, that's, I mean, the thing that immediately smacks of is what we were talking about at the end of group last time. I mean, that's probably saying that there's some, that this is fundamentally, you know, the respiration and stuff is tied to co-absoluteness in some way. Is what that probably is suggesting. You know, how or what, I don't know, but.
It's just a requisite that personality has to be individuated to some degree.
Right. Remember, I kind of referred to this last week.
Personality this, just can't this, be this just amorphous spirit.
Right. This whole issue of individuality. Remember, you know, you were bringing up this whole issue of trying to better appreciate, you know, what you really have no word to describe. Except individuality. I mean, that's the word that you need to use in contrast to unity. And to appreciate that if we didn't have an individuation, you know, that gives us an individuality, that's essential to what personality is identifying to. When you say personality is spirit pattern, you don't want to, you know, take that, you know, as the only thing that you can say about personality. Yeah, it patterns spirit, but spirit that is individuated. Okay, these entities, beings, super-personal, otherwise impersonal, whatevers, there's no individuation. They have no, they're brought into existence by the eternal sun without a relationship to the Isle of Paradise. So they have the absolute of individuality, so they aren't individuated in any way. And so the revelators know that you can't really properly use the word personality to talk about, you know, some sort of patterning that's identified with these facts because they aren't individuated in any way that anyone understands.
The eternal sun is pure spirit, mm-hmm, and these are entities that he's created.
Mm-hmm.
So evidently, we don't need the personal thing later on when it goes into
No. No, definitely not. I mean, if you lose your personality at any point, you disappear.
Not us, but I mean the entities.
Right. these entities, see, I mean, you know they have some patterning, but it's a patterning, see, that's so high that it's nothing that you can really call personality, because there's none of this definitive individuation in play. And again, what's another way of understanding it? What that means is you're talking about something that is fundamentally related to the co-absolute. You're talking about something that's totally transcendent of anything that we even have a transcendent relationship to, like the ultimate. It's beyond that. When you get more into understanding the eternal Son from a deity perspective, you know, you begin to appreciate the relationship of the eternal Son to co-absoluteness more. What they're saying is, it's kind of like, I mean, a simple example that we can understand that they've revealed to us about, that has a similar character of transcendence in association with personality, is the whole transition from a creative spirit to a creative mother spirit. The more you study that, the more you understand it. You know, remember they tell you that even when it's just a creative spirit, to the Creator Son, he engages that fact personally, but no one else does. Well, what does that mean? It doesn't mean that somehow he's magical and can manufacture a personality for her when she doesn't have one. You know, I mean, now obviously she has a personality, but it's nothing that's down in the finite, or even, you know, at a supreme level. Her personality and the individuation that's tied to it is transcendent. But then subsequent to the primary eruption, a measure of that comes down, of that individuality really comes down, and the personality that's identified with it comes down into the finite, and others can observe. And then it comes down even more definitively at the completion of the seventh bestowal at Pentecost, so that even lowly beings like us, you know, recognize the individuality of that whole, and hence the personality of that individual.
So is it the Trinity that's bringing that down?
Right. See, that's the thing. That whole downstepping nature of the Trinity, bringing the Mother Deity down. Yeah. So you're talking about facts that are way, way, way transcendent in some way. You know, it's not just some sort of spirit presence. You know, they know you're dealing with entities/beings. I mean, and really, see, to say being is to remind you that it has to be a patterned fact. Even if no one can experience that, it has to be so transcendent that it's just not experienceable, even by very transcendent beings. Okay, that are out and about, you know, currently in the universe, and they're not just piling up on the sun's worlds. The unrevealed directors of those worlds send some of these beings out as, you know, to engage the super universe governments. There are these super personal spirit representatives are on the headquarters of the seven super universes, you know, as on some sort of a mission from the directors, the unrevealed directors of these worlds. Okay, so I mean they're doing things now. It's just that they're not doing anything that's even remotely connected to what's literally intimately going on. They're preparing for what happens probably after eternity. You know, just like when they're involved in the outer space level, they'll still be doing that. Eternity's not quite as far away then. "Quote unquote," but that would still be what they would be doing. They would be they're kind of antecedent, you know, following sorts of phenomena. They're of the next stage, you know, setting the stage for that now.
Isn't the eternal Son the Word? And so maybe they have something to do with that, bringing it out to the super, you know.
I don't know. Right. So, I mean, right. You're just left, you know, you can try to, you know, do some sort of speculation. Yeah. But anyway, so that's just another, you know, occasionally when they mention these beings, you know, you don't get much. You know, this is one of the more significant little tidbits. It's, you know, the saying that they're synchronized to the 2 billion year cycle. You know, and the fact that 2 billion year phenomenon is totally universal. You know, it's totally universal, you know, out and beyond the fourth outer space level. You know, so that, you see, that's telling you that's a transcendent fact. I think the only possibility is a co-absolute fact.
Maybe it's easier for them to travel in the outgoing cycle.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, birth, you know, uh-huh. Birth. You know, it's a curious thing.
The fact that they're being assembled for ministry in the projected new universe of outer space. That's really tweaks my curiosity as to what the hell is going on out there, or what's going to be going on.
Right, you know, and you know, remember, they're not the only ones that are accumulating basically for the next age. You have all the creature trinitized suns that, you know, especially the trinitized sons of destiny. They're very much just accumulating. You know, for the next universe age, or the wards of the architects, and you know, and so you have these beings that are accumulating that are you know are very much definitively tied to kind of the insides of the next universe ages. But you also have beings that are accumulating for the outsides of the next universe ages, like these beings. See.
These are for the outsides,
yeah. Right? I mean, transcendent space. Of the fourth outer space level. You know, the cosmos infinite related stuff. Right. What's going to be going on? The co-absolute stuff. Okay.
As far as I am informed, no personality has ever been on any one of these spheres of the eternal sun. I have never been assigned to visit one of these worlds in all my long experience in and out of paradise. Even the personalities co-created by the eternal sun do not go to these worlds. We infer that all types of impersonal spirits, regardless of parentage, are admitted to these spirit homes. As I am a person and have a spirit form, no doubt such a world would seem empty and deserted, even if I were permitted to pay it a visit. High spirit personalities are not given to the gratification of purposeless curiosity, purely useless adventure. There is at all times altogether too much intriguing and purposeful adventure to permit the development of any great interest in those projects which are either futile or unreal.
Okay, now, why is that in there? Is that in there so that you know more about perfectors of wisdom? No. Speaking to you, right? You know, you say, oh, I could use this as an opportunity to suggest to them, perhaps, that, you know, maybe they should, you know, quit with all the foolishness that they try to pack into this life, because they, you know, they think if they don't do it now, they're never going to do it, you know, and it's like, you know, and if it feels good, do it, you know, and just all this purposeless, you know. I mean, he's suggesting, you know, why don't you go ahead and start doing what the whole eternity is about, getting control of yourself, you know, consecrating what you do to something worth doing, not just what can be done, but what should be done. Yeah.
We have so far to go, and to be given this kind of stuff is astonishing. But we have to recognize that we need to be here and not be.
Yeah. But kind of the counterpoint to that is, notice he's not just kind of using the off-limits opportunity to insert this. What's the greater context? What's the other stuff we've been just talking about? These worlds are about very, very transcendent, very, very far in the future, and yet plans are already in the works. Okay? Even though we're, you know, in terms of just a mere fact, an unfertilized egg right now, okay? We can still be about the far, far future right now. You know, and to get to the future, you have to have more than zeal. You have to have, you know, personal responsibility and self-control. And you can start sowing the seeds, as it were, in that unfertilized egg that is you, so that when it finally is, you know, when you finally do get to fusion, when you get to spirit conception, and you have a definitive identity, you know, in the eyes of the cosmos finally, you know, you have a lot, you can, you know, take the ground running a lot more, you know, than just starting sort of with the minimal state. You can hit the ground running if you've started to store your treasures in heaven now, instead of lots and lots of useless storing of treasures here on earth, you know. And that doesn't, you know, mean piles of gold. It can mean I got to get all the, do all these things here and take pictures of it and record it and all that, you know. I'm trying, because I got to have all these treasured moments here. Right. See, that's storing treasures here on earth, you know. The moment that you really need to do so that you can take a picture of it. Okay, you don't get to take that picture with you. You know, so don't, you know, be careful not to blow those things out of proportion. You know, they're scaffolding elements of our life here, but, you know, they don't go anywhere really beyond this, the moment. But you can do things now that do go beyond. You
know. Altogether too much intriguing and purposeful adventure. And it's everywhere.
Why do you languish in futile yearning? That word was right there. Okay, so that's just a couple more little tidbits about the sun's world. Okay, so now there's, you know, a lot more that can be said about the worlds of the infinite spirit. So let's see what they give us to kind of get us rolling on that. You know, and there's a lot of stuff about these executive worlds scattered in other places in the book too. So it's not all here, but notice what he. You know, what the author does to kind of get us rolling kind of officially on being introduced to these seven worlds.
For the worlds of the infinite spirit, between the inner circuit of Havona and the shining spheres of the eternal sun, there circle the seven orbs of the infinite spirit, worlds inhabited by the offspring of the infinite spirit, by the trinitized sons of glorified created personalities, and by other types of unrevealed beings concerned with the effective administration of the many enterprises of the various realms of universe activities. The seven master spirits are the supreme and ultimate representatives of the infinite spirit. They maintain their personal stations, their power focuses, on the periphery of paradise, but all operations concerned with their management and direction of the grand universe are conducted on and from these seven special executive spheres of the infinite spirit. The seven master spirits are, in reality, the mind-spirit balance wheel of the universe of universes, an all-embracing, all-encompassing, and all-coordinating power of central location.
Okay, some little things to notice in there. In the process of talking about the seven worlds and the infinite spirit, notice how much they're talking about the seven master spirits. Because, of course, you know, it's really sort of two sides of the same coin in many ways. It's the exact same sevenfold pattern, you know, and that sevenfold pattern that's in all three of the paradise circuits started here. It began with the individuation of the seven master spirits and the seven worlds that are linked to them, and then that, you know, like I mentioned when we started this paper, then that was harmonized into relationship with the eternal Son and the universal Father, so that there's seven worlds in those two circuits as well. You know, but this is the root of this sevenfold pattern that is the seven super universes and, you know, all those parallel expressions of this sevenfold pattern. So Like that last little thing about how they have this very kind of transcendent, overarching relationship to the universe of universes. I mean, they are the seven master spirits of paradise. Kind of their anchor point is quite transcendent, you know. So they have very much a top-down relationship to things. Yeah. You drop down kind of a little bit closer to where the rubber needs to meet the road, and you have these seven worlds of the, you know, of the infinite spirit here, these seven executive worlds and the seven supreme executives that are on the seven. And, you know, but the master spirits themselves are, you know, have a lot of transcendence to their nature. You know, notice how they start that out. The seven master spirits are the supreme and ultimate representatives of the infinite spirit. Remember at the end last time, I was pointing out, since they, you know, they took the opportunity at the end of the two sections back, when they're talking about the Trinitized secrets of supremacy, to mention that they had the power of supremacy, the power of ultimacy, and the power of supreme ultimacy. They had all three. And we were, you know, I brought up the Eternals of Days, one notch down from them, and the Ancients of Days, two notches down. You know, at the Eternal of Days, you have supremacy and ultimacy, and then down to the Ancients of Days, you just have supremacy. You know, and we mentioned that the Trinitized Secrets of Supremacy and the Eternals of Days are obviously very transcendent divine beings, but they're not God. They're not personalized deity. Ancients of Days are God, as well as, you know, being part of this hierarchy, this descending hierarchy. They're also God, their personalized deity, in addition to that supreme divinity. Okay? And so you say, well, if that's God at that level, what if you go up to that level where you had the Eternals of Days, where there was supreme and ultimate in play, but there wasn't personalized deity? Here they are. Okay, the master spirits have the power of supremacy and the power of ultimacy, and their personalized deity. They're God.
They are. They're part of the sevenfold.
Right, they're part of God's sevenfold. They're God. Okay, so, see, they're beings that have supreme and ultimate and their personalized deity. So that's why they're the next notch up, you know, in the sevenfold. You know, here's the Ancients of Days, and the Master Spirits are one notch up because they're both personalized deity. But this is just supreme, and this is supreme and ultimate. Not supreme hyphen ultimate, but supreme and ultimate, okay, like the Eternals of Days. Okay, so, you know, you see you're kind of filling out the picture here a bit. God and just divinity at these different levels. Okay, and then notice the other thing that they said at the end there of that paragraph. You know, kind of speaking to this transcendent relationship that the master spirits have to everything in many ways, to the universe of universes. They used three terms: all embracing, all encompassing, and all coordinating. Well, you know, you may have forgotten the first two, but you know coordinating is a mother word. Okay.
Sounds like a mother word.
Well, yes and no.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Right? Depends on the context. But three things. We've seen these three things before. Up when we were reading in the Supreme Papers, we started getting into the Supreme Papers, and we saw summarizer, focalizer, encompasser. Okay? That was it, she, he. Okay? So they're we're not going to get into the details of the master spirits here. You know, we've got a whole paper 16 on the master spirits. But that's what they're foreshadowing, is, you know, getting to the point where you understand all the details associated with the master spirits so that you can understand in what, you know, how they're related to all coordinating, how they're related to focalizer, you know, or focalization, and how they're related to encompassing, and how they're related to, you know, okay, see, all embracing, grab all the parts, embrace each of the parts, okay, that's the summation, okay, summarizer. So, I mean, we already, you know, we already kind of know that. Let's just, you know, just tease that one. when we're talking about the sevenfold creators, you know, in God the sevenfold here, those bottom three, the creator sons, the ancients of days, and the master spirits, there's a group name for those three. Who remembers what they are? The supreme creators. All right. And they're called the supreme creators, not just not because they are, you know, literally supreme type beings. I mean, you know, a creator son doesn't really start out that way. That's getting to the master son, you know, sort of level, bring in literal supremacy. They're called the supreme creators because they create, as creators, they create the Almighty Supreme. It's through them that the Almighty Supreme, that part of the future Supreme Being, sort of the body of the future Supreme Being, that part is created by and through them. You know, the summation happens through them. You know, everything gets embraced and through them gets created as this totality expression that is the Almighty Supreme. They're the Supreme Creator. So, I mean, the master spirits are some of the supreme creators. They need to be all embracing, okay? Because they're bringing the Almighty Supreme into existence. So that's the Almighty Supreme part of the all embracing.
So they're not evolutionary.
No.
But the supreme being is he not?
Right. You know, in terms of just. I mean, if you're just going to think about this master spirit of paradise, quote unquote, okay, you have this existential domain that is paradise. Okay, that doesn't sound too much like experiential deity. And just in that pure sort of sense, no. But you know that, but they're part of God the sevenfold, and that is definitely tied to evolution. So, you know, it's a very complicated thing. But they have very significant existential transcendence to their nature that some lower being doesn't have. I mean, obviously, if they're tied to the ultimate, that's pretty transcendent fact. Okay, I mean, at the very least, that's eventuating, you know, and not evolving a phenomenon. Okay. But, it's when you start to try to put together the details of God the Sevenfold and sort of the distinction between a being and that being's relationship to other beings in God the Sevenfold from the individuality viewpoint. And, it's very complicated, you know. So don't expect this, like, have this to be immediately clear. Okay, but it's very complicated. Okay, but just, you know, try to take it one step at a time. You know, there you notice they're not trying to, you know, and even when you get to reading the Master Spirit paper, they don't try to point out every single thing that you could point out all in one paragraph or something and try to get you to digest it all at once. I mean, it's sort of the more you get a handle on the whole book and you start to notice that in this context they're mentioning the master spirits, you start to slowly get a little bit more comfortable with the diversity of their engagement of things and how many times their engagement is very transcendent and not sort of immediately apparent. You know, and that's because, you know, the master spirits are the supreme and ultimate representatives of the infinite spirit. They have a lot of transcendence to their nature. And they are of paradise. Yeah. You know, like Magistan of paradise, for instance. You know, that's sort of paradise. Okay. All embracing, all encompassing, all coordinating.
From these seven special spheres, the master spirits operate to equalize and stabilize the cosmic mind circuits of the grand universe. They also have to do with the differential spiritual attitude and presence of the deities throughout the grand universe. Physical reactions are uniform, unvarying, and always instantaneous and automatic. but experiential spiritual presence is in accordance with the underlying conditions or states of spiritual receptivity inherent in the individual minds of the realms.
Okay, so they're going to expand on what they're starting up there as we go forward. But notice the first foundations they're laying about thinking about experiential deity and our relationship to experiential deity, very direct relationship, and what that implies. So the first thing they remind you of is you have these seven super universes tied to the seven master spirits. And why, and how do you immediately understand the differential amongst the master spirits? You have the sevenfold association on a sub-absolute level, like they are. See, they're supreme and ultimate, but that's sub-absolute. That sub-absolute, sevenfold association between the Father, the Son, and the Spirit, or the universal Father, the eternal Son, and the infinite Spirit. As there's the Father, then there's the Son, then there's the Spirit, then there's the Father and the Son, the Father and the Spirit, the Son and the Spirit, and then there's the Father and the Son and the Spirit. There's those seven different associations on a sub-absolute level. Okay, seven different deity associations. So that's when they say they also have to do with the differential spiritual attitude and presence of the deities, see, throughout the grand universe. So they flavor the deity presence and the spirit presence in each of the seven super universes. So we are very much limited in what we can receive. We can only receive what someone who is within the spiritual womb of the seventh master spirit can receive. We haven't transcended the limitations of being created within this womb. We are of this womb, so we can only know what can be known via the nature of this domain that we are of. Okay, so there's a whole lot of things that could be thrown at us that we would have no ability to experience right now, because only someone from the first super universe, you know, or the fourth super universe, you know, can experience that fact. We can't.
Yeah, but we do have all three.
Right. But notice that doesn't give you the other six. See, it's very important to understand those seven associations. Okay? They're disjoint. I mean, they're not overlapping. It's not like the other six are inside of us. There's no overlap amongst the seven super universes. There's hard walls separating the seven super universes. Nothing crosses. Okay? We have what you get when you have all three, which means we don't have what you get if you have just one or two. That limits us from that purity of reception that someone, say, in the first super universe has. They can get stuff that's purely a father-like fact. We can't, because we can only get something that has all three at the same time. We can't get something that has just the Father. It has to have all three components, or we can't receive it. Okay?
I would sort of assume that then once we're sworn into the core of the finality, we come back in to experience.
When are you birthed out of the womb of the seventh master spirit so that you can begin to access stuff outside of this? It's in Havona. Remember what circuit of Havona? Do you find your master spirit and say hi? I mean, you find him on the seventh, so you're graduating to the sixth circuit. You know, you now have graduated out of that womb. Okay, you can turn around and go, oh, hello, Mr. Seventh Master Spirit, and hello, you other six. See, for the first time, you've transcended a relationship to just that one spiritual domain. You now have a relationship to the other six. Okay, and that just grows. You know, and you start to really use that fact as a finaliter by going to the other six super universes. Okay. And Let's see, what was something else I was going to bring in there. What was it? The spirit. So you have that, you know, that very sort of immediately understandable sevenfold deity differential. Okay, but remember, it's also spirit. I mean, you take the unity, the spiritual unity of the central universe, and you individuate it into that spiritual unity into seven flavors. The kind of spiritual unity that we have here is distinct from six other flavors of spiritual unity that we know nothing of. Okay, it's unity, but see, it's a relative unity. You're going to have, you know, ever more transcendent relationships to unity from here to eternity. You begin very much circumscribed. The only relationship to unity that you can have is what the seventh master spirit has taken from that which is above and downstepped to us with his flavoring.
So the first one is not only the world of the Father?
No, the first super universe, not the world of the Father. The first super universe, the flavor of that one is just the Father.
So they wouldn't have angels then and stuff there because they wouldn't...
Now, there's angels everywhere. If for no other reason, there's ascenders everywhere. Ascension is the dominant scheme in this super universe. It's not the dominant scheme in the other six, but you still have ascenders. I mean, Grand Fanda came from number one. He had guardian angels, okay, in super universe number one, okay. But, you know, we don't know what those other six schemes are. I mean, those other six schemes are in this super universe too, but they're subordinate to the ascension scheme. That's the dominant scheme here. There's all these things, okay? You know, all of the creative mother spirits in a super universe have a like nature. They're all flavored by the master spirit of that super universe. So all the creative mother spirits are a different flavor in the, you know, in each of the other super universes, for instance. There's all this difference. Yeah, I mean, and they're, you know, they're very different. And yeah, it's just on and on. There's all these, but in terms of really tied to the master spirits, the creative mother spirits are very intimately tied. You know, they get out here through a master spirit. They're completely saturated, you know, by the nature of that master spirit to get out here. Okay, marinated in that master spirit to get out here. Okay. All right. So, spiritual attitude and presence of the deities. You know, each have these seven flavors. So that's the first qualification to your receptivity, to give you a little humility on what kind of receptivity you have. Has nothing to do with the profoundness of your choice or anything. You just can't choose to receive anything that gets received in those other six super universes. You don't have the proper receiver, and you won't until you're a fourth-stage spirit, a graduate spirit, on the sixth circuit of Avona. Okay. So what other things limit our receptivity besides just kind of that fundamental womb that we're in issue?
Did this physical comment, are they lumping all the seven together that way?
Right. I mean, there's a lot of commonality physically.
The twofold energy system.
Right. You have a twofold energy system in all of them. Yeah, I mean, obviously there's some overlay, you know, but the foundation is in common. Okay, and kind of one of the ways that speaks to that, go back to the root of the power beings. You have the seven supreme power directors. They're identical in nature. Yeah. Whereas the seven master spirits are totally distinct in nature.
Yeah. So that's not a factor in these differentials that they're...
Right, it's not, you know, not really a bottom-up thing per se. I mean, the differential of seven master spirits gets imposed at a pretty deep level sometimes, okay, but it isn't welling up out of the bottom. It's being imposed from the top down.
Physical authority, presence, and function are unvarying in all the universes, small or great. The differing factor in spiritual presence or reaction is the fluctuating differential in its recognition and reception by will creatures. Whereas the spiritual presence of absolute and existential deity is in no manner whatever influenced by attitudes of loyalty or disloyalty on the part of created beings, at the same time it is true that the functioning presence of sub-absolute and experiential deity is definitely and directly influenced by the decisions, choices, and will attitudes of such finite creature beings, by the loyalty and devotion of the individual being, planet, system, constellation, or universe. But this spiritual presence of divinity is not whimsical nor arbitrary. Its experiential variance is inherent in the free will endowment of personal creatures.
Okay. So you start with a receptivity limitation because of your nature, and then you superimpose your will upon that nature. And that could pretty much turn the whole receptivity off, you know, if you wanted to. You could have zero receptivity, okay, after you get done with your free will. And notice...
heat without light.
Yeah, heat without light. Okay, so a couple things. First of all, notice how they make a point of trying to help you understand. It's like, well, wait a minute, I've always had the sense. Yeah, okay, well, that sense you've long had, where exactly, you know, is that? What is that directly tied to? Whereas the spiritual presence of absolute and existential deity is in no matter, whatever, influenced by attitudes of loyalty or disloyalty on the part of created beings, okay? And they purposely have loyalty or disloyalty so that you recognize the double-edged sword there, okay? First of all, the loyalty. We all want that very much. You know, when we recognize we're a child of God, we really want our notion of God to embrace this fact that... that God doesn't forget me. You know, he intimately knows I'm there. His presence is unvarying. The problem is we've had a tendency all throughout history to think that that's because we're loyal. That I wield that constancy of God. Because I'm loyal, God the Father never leaves me, you know, and so we develop all kinds of systems, you know, you must dot this I and cross this T, or, you know, you'll break the connection. No, it's impossible. I mean, existential deity is existential deity. You know, the Father is absolutely transcendent of all temporal, spatial issues. The only thing that's in play is, do you exist or not? Okay, if you exist, there is no relativity. It's he loves you, for instance, absolutely. There's nothing you can do or not do. If you exist, you have absolute love. It's absolute love. He can't change it. You can't change it. Nothing can change it. Okay, it's changeless. Okay. Even if you're disloyal, the Father's presence, engagement, doesn't vary one iota. Okay? The only thing that could possibly change it, you know, and obviously it's not the changing of the Father or his beaming of his love, is if you turn off your receptor, if you don't exist anymore. If you make yourself iniquitous, okay, you don't exist, you aren't real, you don't have a receptor anymore, and you can't receive his broadcast. But his broadcast is still, you know, at full wattage. Nothing has changed. Nothing can change it. Okay, so that's really, you know, really reassuring. It's, you know, you want to firmly grab a hold of that. It's like, okay, that's what my spiritual consciousness wants to hear. Okay, and I know that's God the Father, the existential God. However, there's more to the story than God the Father. There's experiential deity. Okay? And it has relativity. Okay? And notice what they bring in here to really emphasize that now you need to go beyond that consecration of your will to the perfect will of God the Father. Notice how they word this in here, that sub-absolute and experiential deity is definitely and directly influenced by decisions, choices, and will attitudes. Okay? We have a twofold consecration. Okay, the will attitude is obviously still in play. Consecration of your will attitude, and kind of in a dynamic sense, you know, what kind of a volitional fact are you? You know, the exercising of the will. Okay, so that will attitude, that volitional nature. Okay. On the other end of the spectrum is the consecration of your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother. Okay. What are the precise forms in the mindal energy system that you've constructed? Decisions are a literal shape in your mindal energy system. Okay. So you have forms in the mind, which are associated with the consecration of your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother. You have a volitional nature that's associated with your consecration to the will of the Father. And then there's something that links the two together. Choice. Your personality. Okay. You know, when you start thinking about that, that whole gift of personality, you have this individuation of will, you exercise that will as volition, you bring it to a focus point as choice. And from just a personality perspective, that it seems like you just have those three. But that personality is identified with a mindal self. And that mindal self has decision forms. Yeah. So you have will, volition, choice, and decision. You have that whole spectrum. Yeah. And to really start seeing it in kind of this new way that they're encouraging here, that you have the two consecrations as the two endpoints. It's like the substance. And the choice binds the two together. You need to choose to bind your volition to your decisions. Okay. To use that spirit glue to firmly bond your personality to yourself. Your volition to your mind, your mindal self. How much benefit you get from the ministry of experiential deity depends upon the fullness of that. A half-hearted nature will not synchronize with experiential deity. You can't just have volition or even just volition and choice. It has to be brought into decision form, and that form has to conform to the cosmos, and then and only then will you benefit from the ministries of experiential deity that are present, you know, in the cosmos, present on our world. Things like the Spirit of Truth. The Spirit of Truth is not coming from God the Father. It's not coming from existential deity. It's subject to serious limitations and constraints.
Well, I was going to say, where in that continuum does what's possible enter in? Because you may have all kinds of volition to do wonderful things, but if it's not part of the choice, the range of choices that are available to you.
Well, choice, I mean, you know, that's an inner life fact, and choice is not dependent upon specifics out here. It's spiritual choice. See? You have to start to use, you know, we blur the words decision and choice together. You know, you got to separate if you're going to understand the revelation. Okay? It's mindal decisions, it's spiritual choices. Okay? It's independent of material specifics, you know, and time. spiritual choices. You make a spiritual choice, and then you figure out how to translate those choices into decisions, which take into account, you know, what day of the week it is, you know, what country you're standing in, who you're standing in front of, you know, it takes into account all of the material facts and time that are in play in the moment. Decisions, you know, see, bridge the gap between the facts and the choices. They're mindful decisions. Mind connects matter to spirit. Okay? But those decisions need to be predicated on actual spiritual choices, not so-called spiritual choices where you've exalted mind into spirit. And one of the ways you can challenge yourself to differentiate is, you know, is this actually a spiritual choice? Well, is it independent of time and space or not? If it's not independent of time and space, then it's a decision. It's not a choice. It's an idea. It's associated with ideas. It's not associated with ideals. Choose this day whom you will serve. As for me, I will serve the Lord. Okay, that's a choice. Right. It has nothing. It makes no consideration of the facts. It's totally independent of the facts, independent of time, space, everything. It's irrelevant what's in play. You choose to serve the Lord. Okay, that's a choice. That's not a decision.
So decisions are ever varying.
Yeah, ever varying.
But a choice will
endures.
Will lend constancy to your decision.
Yeah, yeah. It's the overarching fact that gives, that brings unity into the associative domain of the decisions in mind. Okay. Now, another reason why you want to translate choices into decisions, let's say you want to benefit from a thought adjuster. The thought adjuster can only engage decision forms. The thought adjuster can't engage choices. It's in the mind, not above the mind. It's in the mind. If you don't translate a choice into a decision and make that decision conform to the cosmos, the adjuster can't help you. You have no receptivity to what the adjuster has to offer. If you haven't translated ideals into ideas, for instance, you know, anything, any benefit you think you're getting from the adjuster is delusional. Okay? It's wishful thinking. Okay? That's what these paragraphs are about. These paragraphs are about coming to terms with facts. And that if you want to receive the ministry that comes down into the experiential domain, you know, and is tied to facts, like, you know, we all don't have one adjuster. We each have a separate adjuster. It's relative to us. It's not an absolute existential thing. It's relative and experiential. Okay? And that means there's huge constraints, and all those constraints, I mean, other than the fact what super universe you're in, okay, are in your hands. The Father has given them to your hands. You have free will. Okay, a simple example, like the Spirit of Truth. What does it say up in paper 34 about the Spirit of Truth in this regard? Though the Spirit of Truth is poured out upon all flesh, this Spirit of the Son is almost wholly limited in function and power by man's personal reception of that which constitutes the sum and substance of the mission of the bestowal Son.
We don't need to really unpack all those details right now. That's a little superfluous. Let's just get the basic notion.
The point is that you're in charge here. And if you haven't taken delight in cultivating, there's nothing the Spirit of Truth can do for you. With just one tiny little caveat. You notice it said almost wholly limited. Why doesn't it say wholly limited? Why does it say almost wholly limited? Because the Creative Mother Spirit, purely by grace, gave you one initial thread of supremacy in your mind that the Spirit of Truth can engage. Okay, you don't have to choose that. Anything beyond that initial tiniest measure of grace,
you know, the spirit of truth can't do anything. You have no receptor to receive its ministry. You have to choose to get another thread in play. And then and only then, you know, will you get more spirit of truth ministry. And then, you know, then they go, the other stuff is explained to you kind of the flavor of the thread that it synchronizes with, okay? But, you know, the details aren't that important as much. Just recognizing that it's, you know, that it's all, you know, this experiential variance is inherent in the free will endowment of personal creatures. It's up to you. If you don't take delight in cultivating, if you don't choose to consecrate your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother, the spirit of truth is just flowing over you. No impact on you because you have no receptor. Okay? You know, you have to put up a grappling hook in a sense, you know, or a funnel or whatever you want to think of to funnel that ministry down within you. It's experiential deity can't impose itself on you. There was, where was it over here? Yeah.
Of course, the mantra that we're taught early on is, you know, not my will, but your will be done. But you have to make your decisions conform to that. In other words, you have to follow up on that. It's not sufficient just to say.
Definitely, you know, just like what Jesus did with the golden rule, you know, where he took it from the do not mode to the do mode, do unto others as you have them do unto you. Okay. Rather than not my will, but your will be done. Take it from the negative to the positive. It is my will that your will be done. Yeah. See? And that's, see, you have to will a conformity, the favorable conditions that will allow his ministry to engage you. You know, if that's going to be more than a platitude, it is my will that your will be done. I just waved the magic wand, and now I'm done. Right. No, you have to wholeheartedly consecrate that fact into existence. That doesn't just come into existence by fiat, just because existential deity is. Okay, that's an experiential deity. One must do something as well as be something if you're going to benefit from that notion that it is my will that your will be done.
You want to do the will of the Father. You want to make the correct choices. You want to be receptive to the infinite spirit's circuit. So, it just, I don't know, I'm trying to bring
right.
it down.
Right, the one, right, there's one more element there. You want to do the will of the Father, but there's only one way to do the will of the Father. If you haven't figured out what the Father's way is, you can't do the Father's will. Okay, the way isn't, you don't manufacture the way. The way already is. The way is, you have to conform to the universal harmony of God the Mother. She's the way. If you aren't like the way, the will is irrelevant. Your will is futile. Why do you languish in futile yearning? I yearn to do the will of the Father. But you don't obey the truth. You haven't conformed your mind to the way. You got the will part, but none of the way. And so it doesn't flow through you. There has to be a way for the Father's will to flow through you. If you haven't prepared the way, if you haven't supplied the favorable conditions, nothing happens.
And the way is with the Mother.
The way is the Mother. The Mother is the Father's way to you and everything else. And we've talked about this. I mean, just to get his personality circuit to you, there has to be a way to get that across space to you. He has no relationship to space. He can't get it across space to get to you. Something that has a relationship to space has to carry. There has to be the Father's way for his will, his encirclement to get to you. The Mother is the way. So, and if you want to be part of those flows in the Mother, the Father's flow is in the mother, then you need to be like the mother. You need to supply the favorable conditions for the flows to also be in you. You have to conform to the cosmos. If you don't conform to the cosmos, it goes around you. All these flows go around you, not through you. Right. You have to be in harmony.
In some ways, that's resulting. You experience harmony, and then the more favorable conditions keep.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, it's a positive feedback loop. Yeah. You know, I mean, the simple thing that we observe in, you know, of all human knowledge, that which is of greatest value is to know the religious life of Jesus and how he lived it. Okay? Is that just a platitude, or if you dissected, if you unpacked every word, you fully understand exactly what that means so that you can draw some benefit from part four of the book? You know, how do you, what's a simple way that you know that, that Jesus had supplied the favorable conditions for the Father's gifts to flow through him? He had peace that passes all understanding. He was in harmony with the moment. He had grown his faith into trust. It's not spiritual faith tied to the spiritual father. It's soul trust tied to the mother.
Abiding patience.
Okay? You have to be like the mother. For it to, and if you're like the mother, you have this, you know, this fruit of the spirit. See, to understand the fruits, that's why we've upstepped Galatians to up there, at the end of part four. We don't just have single words as the fruit of the Spirit. We don't just have words that are tied to the consecration of your will to the Father. We have pairs of words that are attempting to teach you what it's like to have a form through which the Father can flow, to be of the way, to have the, do you manifest the cosmic fruits of the Spirit? Do you have this full linkage? Do you have just love? Or do you have loving service? Have you figured out how to take will into volition, through choice, into decision, connected to facts? And conforming to the cosmos so that it isn't immediately, it doesn't immediately collapse, that it's upheld, this linkage that you have to the facts. Okay.
If you obey the truth, you will.
If you are obeying the truth, because the truth is fundamentally a flow, it flows through that hole, up from the top, down through the facts, back out again. You're part of that circuit of truth. Okay, have you created the conduit for truth to flow through? Are you obeying the truth? It's one thing to know the truth. Better than knowing about the truth. But can you think the truth? Can you think the truth?
Experience.
All right, that's the truth. I mean, your spiritual consciousness can know truth. It can feel it. Okay, remember, it's your thoughts, not your feelings, that lead you God. That's the fundamental way to really distinguish that. Rather than saying no, okay? It's one thing to feel the truth. It's a whole nother thing to think the truth. Have you grown your feeling of truth into a thinking of the truth? And the first thing that you should be struck by is what every little child is struck by. You're not given an ability to think the truth. So those words aren't even meaningful. They're just words. I think the truth. What does that even mean? Yeah, that's the whole point. We're created, as little children, where that is initially just goes right over our head. That initial little thread of supremacy doesn't really give you the ability to think the truth. You can feel it with that little core thread.
Knowing more than feeling?
We're not talking about just kind of, delusional sort of second level of meaning sort of feelings. Spirit, fundamentally, you can't stub your toe on it. Right now, the only relationship you have to the fact of unity is you feel it in your mind. You know, you feel the presence of unity. You feel a relationship with unity. So the objective feeling, like you have in the upper domain of the hourglass, not subjective feeling.
Faith, that would be the same
thing. Yeah, living faith. Not just mere faith, but living faith. Living faith is trust. Yeah. See, you're walking, you know, if you're living, there's an ing. You're walking on something. You're not just fearfully trying to, you know. It's one thing to know the truth. It's another thing to obey the truth, you know. Why do the heathen rage? Because they know not the truth. Why do you languish in futile yearning? Because you obey not the truth. Okay? You have to take it from, you know, feeling to thinking. Okay? And not, you know, not wishful thinking, actual thinking. You have to be able to have a, you have to have an objective consciousness. You have to have cosmic consciousness in order to think the truth. Spiritual consciousness can't think the truth. It can only feel the truth. Only cosmic consciousness can think the truth.
So that completes a circuit when you actually...
Right. And then the Father has a way through you.
Because of thinking, you're equating with a plan of action, really. Is that what...
Right, you're bringing, it's just like we're saying, you're bringing it all the way down into a an engagement of the facts that conforms to the harmony of the cosmos. You have a full circuit in play. You know, just think about it, you know, here's the truth. Remember, the truth is not in the mind. You know, the spirit of truth is above. Okay? So at the top levels of your mind, you know, in that spiritual domain of your mind, you feel something up there. You feel something flowing over the top surface of your mind. And it feels good. It feels true. Yeah, you feel the spirit of truth. But there's no doorway. You need to open the door so that it can flow in and through you, not just over the top of you. And the only way is to, you have to, you know, it isn't just as, you know, a fiat thing where you, you know, just turn a crank and, you know, a door opens and it just falls in, okay? You know, it only flows through the kind of conductor that conducts truth. If your mind doesn't conform to the cosmos, you don't have a conductor for truth to flow through. Your mind has to be like the cosmos, because it's flowing through the cosmos up here, see? The cosmos is up here. It's flowing in the cosmos. The Creative Mother Spirit is true, okay? The Spirit of Truth flows through her presence. Okay? You have to be like that stuff up there for it to flow in and through you. If you haven't taken delight in cultivating, you're not like the cosmos. You know, and it doesn't matter how much you imagine opening the sky doors, it still is just going to be flowing over the top of you. Right. Exactly.
I feel like you're describing how the car is made, but I still don't know how to drive it.
Well, what it means specifically, they're building up to. Okay, so let's get back to this and notice what they're doing. Like I said, they're introducing some things here. They're using the perfecter of wisdom is using the opportunity of he's been given the assignment. Tell them something about the circuits of the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. And he's going, yeah, right.
He doesn't say.
He said, "Well, not a heck of a lot I can say, but I could use this as an opportunity to introduce, to get some juices flowing on some things, which other revelators are going to pick up on. When you get to paper 16, okay, we're in paper 13 right now. We're getting close to paper 16. Okay, they're building the story." You get to paper 16, they fully introduce the seven master spirits, and then they have a section called, section six is called
Cosmic Intuition.
The Cosmic Mind, right, where they introduce the three cosmic intuitions. And then they have three sections that follow that. This is the answer to your question. Okay? Those, you have a three-section essay on, okay, so I have three cosmic intuitions, so what? Yeah, how do you drive that car? I mean, you introduce them, and then you tell me that everything that has any meaning, any substance, any value is about driving that car, but you didn't tell me how to drive the car. you just told me that if I'm not driving that car, I don't exist. You know, I'm not real. Okay. Can you tell me how to drive the car? Yes, we'll do that. We're going to give you three detailed sections that you can reflect on, because we just told you when we introduced it that all you have to do is reflect. It's like, well, reflect on what? Well, start with these three sections. Okay. Reflect on these three sections. If you can create a reflective relationship, if you can synchronize with the truth in these three sections, your car is moving now. Never mind if you manage to begin to synchronize with the whole revelation. But if you can take our little essay, our little three-section essay on the three cosmic intuitions and strike step with it, the only way you can do that is through reflection. Your agitated mind cannot strike step with those three sections. You will have to have done what we told you is the only thing that you need to do, to put your mind in a reflective state. That's the only way to synchronize with what the content of those, and now you're moving. And the whole revelation will begin to change. You'll feel something flowing through you that you didn't feel before. You'll have given a way for the Spirit of Truth. You know, he said, I am the way, but if you're going to participate in his beingness of the way, you have to be of the way. You know, you have to make yourself the way like he is, like he's declared to you that he is. He is not just the will of the Father, he's the way of the Mother as well. And that's definitively demonstrated by the fact that how does the Spirit of Truth get to you? Through his ubiquitous spirit presence? No, he doesn't have a ubiquitous spirit presence. She does. The only way for him to get the Spirit of Truth to you is through her. The Mother is the way. It's the way for him, it's the way for the Father, it's the way for all of us. This distinction is vital. For in a cosmic system, the individual members are not connected with each other, except in relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole. In relation to the whole, you have to conform to the cosmos. And through the individuality of that cosmos, the Creator Son, now Master Son, is connected to you. And the connection is called the Spirit of Truth. It was poured out, it wasn't poured out on the pile of parts. It wasn't poured out upon these absolute part things that the Father created. It was poured out upon the allness. It was poured out upon the ubiquitous presence of the Mother. Yeah. That's what's all like. Yeah. He's the I am. She's the all are. Okay. Okay. So see that they're trying to get you motivated, hungry for some help with exactly how do I supply favorable conditions? You know, what does favorable conditions look like? You know, what is there? There must be some technique or something. It's like, well, not so much a technique, but a state of consciousness that it's sad to record that so few persons on your ranch are familiar with. Something called reflection. Something that goes beyond what a handful of people are doing, that's called meditation. Yeah. Meditation, yeah, it's better than the incessant clamoring, but it's still a far cry from a reflective state of consciousness. Okay? And reflection is more than contemplative prayer. It's more than contemplative worship. It's the super additive consequence of the relationship between contemplative prayer and contemplative worship. It's something way above where people have even really hardly imagined, by and large. It's sad to record that so few persons. Okay. But
you can reflect on your own personal experience.
You'd be amazed what you can begin to reflect on once you sort of get that state of mind. When the cosmos starts to flow through you, things start to become apparent. I mean,
it's going to pass understanding really fast.
I mean, you know, I mean, obviously you can't do this in a vacuum, you know, to what you're saying. I mean, you obviously, it's like, well, what can I reflect on besides my experiences? Well, you could reflect on revelation. We don't have mode of consciousness, so we can't just do it all on our own.
You know, no matter how much we take delight in cultivating a relationship with the three cosmic intuitions, if we have not revelation, we can't go very far.
And what did they give?
We gave us an epical revelation. You have everything you'll ever need. Okay? Yeah. Have you discovered this thing? Is it in your lap? Yes, you've discovered it. Now, have you recognized it? Or are you still languishing in futile yearning? Can you recognize it? Do you have a reflective relationship with the fifth epical revelation? If you've recognized it through that reflective relationship, because you took delight in cultivating a relationship with the three cosmic intuitions, then you can finally interpret it. It will come alive. You can apply it to your life, and it will transform your life. But you have to supply the way first. You have to recognize it first. You can't just skip that and interpret it.
So is it delusional to have such strength in faith of God that's within you and the mother? Is that delusional?
No. Well, no, you can answer that question. You don't need me to answer that question. Right. You should be able to distinguish between delusion and reality. But then you humbly know that it's just the beginnings. So now that you have that solid anchor of inconcussable, you know, hold on that supreme thread that was given to you by grace, now do something with it. Don't just be there. One must do something as well as me. You know, you know you can, with all courage, can do things. Because nothing can break that grip. You know that no real harm can befall you. So you can boldly go forward and do. Okay? You're going to build. Okay? You want to be a great big conductor of the truth. Not a tiny little swizzle stick of truth.
Okay?
Capillary tube of truth. Yeah, you want to be a fire hose of truth, okay?
Take the tourniquet off your adjuster.
And no amount of wishful thinking turns a capillary tube into a fire hose. You have to take delight in cultivating. Okay, so I think you guys kind of get it. You know, see, this is, it's like, I'm going to read about more boring stuff. No, of course we're not going to read about boring stuff. I mean, you know, they're starting to really get some stuff blowing here. And see, and notice that in order to really have the context for this kind of conversation, you have to have a significant budding awareness of cosmology in your mind. You know, these are the five papers on the cosmology. And once you have the full five papers on cosmology, you know where you dwell and what you are. That's paper 15, and the next paper is paper 16, where they introduce the three cosmic intuitions. See, they're building it up here. You need a full relationship with the Father, full relationship with the rest of existential deity. That's the first five papers, second five papers. Then a full relationship with the cosmos, and then they get to the rubber meets the road. They tell you about the seven master spirits who bring that down to you, and you have the three cosmic intuitions. Now start journeying up what they've just revealed to you. You know, it's a very definitive thing they're doing here. And you're starting to really see it. The moment they have an opportunity to start really talking about the seven master spirits in context, all of a sudden they're alluding to that essay on the three cosmic intuitions and stuff, see? All right. And you know, just you know, little, you know, there's just tons of things in there. Just, you know, maybe one other little thing to notice, you know, by the loyalty and devotion of the individual being, planet, system, constellation, or universe, what makes a lasting impression on children?
Like, loyalty.
Yeah, loyalty. Yeah, not precept or even example, right? See, it's all linked. You know, it's like, well, how do I do that? How do I go beyond precept or even example to this loyalty thing?
What does loyalty look like? How do I live loyally? You know, it's the tadpole, you remember? It's that paragraph. This, they're getting into the mechanics of it a little bit more. You need to conform to the cosmos. Well, if you don't know the cosmos, you certainly can't conform to it. You have to, strike step with this bigger picture that goes beyond some faint flicker of faith, recognition of a spiritual father. You need to know about the way. All right.
The determiner of the differential of spiritual presence exists in your own hearts and minds and consists in the manner of your own choosing, in the decisions of your minds, and in the determination of your own wills. This differential is inherent in the free will reactions of intelligent personal beings. Beings whom the Universal Father has ordained shall exercise this liberty of choosing. And the deities are ever true to the ebb and flow of their spirits in meeting and satisfying the conditions and demands of this differential of creature choice, now bestowing more of their presence in response to a sincere desire for the same, and again withdrawing themselves from the scene as their creatures decide adversely in the exercise of their divinely bestowed freedom of choice. And thus does the spirit of divinity become humbly obedient to the choosing of the creatures of the realms.
So, just kind of repeating it. You have to choose to connect your volition to your decisions. Your personality to your mind. You have to choose that identification. It doesn't, just automatically grow. You have to choose it. And if you don't, the flow will go elsewhere.
Around you.
You notice that, right. Notice how they're literally trying to, they ebb and flow, okay? Just like I was saying. I mean, you can just think of it very literally. The cosmos is a presence. It's not a vacuum, There's flows in it. They either flow through you or around you, okay? But they're always flowing.
I can hear the stream, I can feel it.
It's not like, notice there, it's all relative to you. It's not like they're saying, if you don't have this wholehearted consecration to conform to the cosmos, that you shut the flow off in the cosmos. Okay? No. You're not going to shut the Supreme down. The Supreme will just adapt to you. Right? The Supreme has supreme mind, supreme ability to adapt to any finite facts like you. It will go around you. It can adapt to you. Okay? Why would you want it to so negatively adapt to you? Wouldn't you like it to positively adapt to you? Take delight in cultivating.
Don't be an eddy current.
Right, yeah. Don't be a source of eddy currents as the flow goes around you and swirls in the backside. Yes. All right.
The executive abodes of the seven master spirits are, in reality, the paradise headquarters of the seven super universes and their correlated segments in outer space. Each master spirit presides over one super universe, and each of these seven worlds is exclusively assigned to one of the master spirits. There is literally no phase of the sub-paradise administration of the seven super universes which is not provided for on these executive worlds. They are not so exclusive as the spheres of the Father or those of the Son, and though residential status is limited to native beings and those who work thereon, these seven administrative planets are always open to all beings who desire to visit them and who could command the necessary means of transit.
Okay, there's a couple of things you got to kind of delay in there. Okay, first of all, though, it was just as we started reading, I was just delighting, and Chris bringing in the eddy currents picture there. That whole bit of it, if you're getting turbulence, swirling as it's flowing around you, if you become this prickly thing, you know, that is trying to flow around, and so there's all these eddy currents. I mean, that creates a drag.
That's a cue right there.
Remember, you know, that? It's not like, you know, your choices don't have an impact on the whole. You're a drag on the whole.
Yeah. Totally.
Right? You know, just literally in the way that, you know, if the air doesn't flow smoothly over your car, if it's swirling on the back, you know, of the car because it ends in a sharp line, you know, that's a drag on the car. You burn more fuel trying to, you know, push that car through the air. Okay.
How did physics come to be like
that? See, and it's just, see, it's all the same thing. I mean, you will be a drag on the cosmos like that. But it's not like it can't get around you. You know, it'll still get around you, but you will be a drag. Okay, now, so notice one of the things that they put in there, you know, as they start talking. I was reminding you, you have the seven master spirits of paradise, and then you have these seven executive worlds. So there is kind of this two-part to the picture. There's the paradise stuff, and then there's the sub-paradise administration. See, they use that expression. So, you know, just appreciating that you have the paradise facts of the seven master spirits and the seven supreme power directors downstepped in this first sub-paradisiacal, you know, foothold are these seven worlds, these seven executive worlds. So see that downstepping element of it. You know, and then they're pointing out that, you know, you don't have, you know, vast or whole secretive aspects to these, you know, they're like you do with the worlds of the Father and the Son. These are wholly open domains. If you can command the necessary means of transit.
<There's cost.
laughs> Now, just, you know, you kind of chuckle at that. Okay, but notice how that's, we've already been talking and talking and talking about that. Just because you have the will to go to one of these executive worlds, that doesn't get you there. You have to have a way.
Yeah.
You have to be able to command the necessary means of transit. Not a means of transit, the necessary means. There's only one way to get there. You know, you don't get to pick the way. You need to find the way. Okay? Okay? See, he's using every opportunity. If you just think about, you know, don't just chuckle at it, you know. Why did he throw that in there? He wanted to, it's like, oh, that'd be a simple example. They can understand that, you know. If you can't command the means of transit, you know, you're not going to get to Europe, you know, by wishful thinking. You know, and obviously it's going to involve a lot more than just, you know, being able to flag down a transport angel. You know, I mean, there's obviously, you know, you have to somehow be able to have a relationship to there and the means to there and everything. It's going to be some sort of a very literal thing. You have to have willed yourself into that way. You have to be able to command the necessary means of the transit. You have to bring the will into conformity with the way. So it's true with the simplest things down here all the way. See, they're saying it's a universal fact. Doesn't matter where you are.
What you're doing is bringing that spirit ideal and condensing it into an individuality of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Using to restate the things.
And the personality can do that, see?
Yeah.
It can get the volition connected to the individuated things, the decision forms. Choice can do that. And that's why it says discover, recognize, interpret, and it says choose. But what do they do to the word choose? There's those four words. They do something to the word choose in that sequence of four words. They italicize the word choose. Because that's, see, we've just discovered why. You know, why? Yeah, because it's the bridge between the will and the way. Choose. Okay? Choose in such a way that there's a way. Okay? See, it's the kind of choice that it's a consequence of discover, then recognize, then interpret. Then you can actually connect the two. you skip any of those steps, it's just wishful thinking that you're somehow going to get this flow going through you. It's only the kind of choice that's a consequence of objective recognition followed by wise interpretation. Only that kind of choice is going to connect these two. Okay, so let's wrap her up here.
To me, these executive worlds are the most interesting and intriguing spots outside of paradise. In no other place in the wide universe can one observe such varied activities involving so many different orders of living beings, having to do with operations on so many diverse levels, occupations at once material, intellectual, and spiritual. When I am accorded a period of release from assignment, if I chance to be on paradise or in Havona, I usually proceed to one of these busy worlds of the seven master spirits, there to inspire my mind with such spectacles of enterprise, devotion, loyalty, wisdom, and effectiveness. Nowhere else can I observe such an amazing interassociation of personality performances on all seven levels of universe reality. And I am always stimulated by the activities of those who well know how to do their work and who so thoroughly enjoy doing it. Presented by a perfecter of wisdom commissioned thus to function by the Ancients of Days on Universa.
Okay, notice there's a couple little things in there. Notice he's inspired by loyalty. He's still looking for loyalty. And then we've mentioned this a couple times already as we've been chugging through from the front of the book. This reference to, quote-unquote, the seven levels of universe reality. Let's remind ourselves just, you know, again really quick of what that is, because we're coming to it in the next paper. Yeah. So that's a little kind of foreshadowing of the next paper. These seven levels, it's not what you get up there in paper 106. It's not that. All that complicated stuff up there. What it is just on page 156, the beginning of section 4 of the next paper. These seven levels of universe reality, quote unquote, are material, morontial, spiritual, absonite, ultimate, co-absolute, and absolute. Or, see, and in this context, it's literally talking about the bodies, basically, of beings. So they put morontial in there, so you have a substance. You know, or if you don't need that number two to be a substance like that, that's mind. You know, so material, mindal, spiritual, another way you could say it. Okay, those are the levels. Three finite things, matter, mind, and spirit, and then all the stuff that's transfinite. Okay, absonite, ultimate, co-absolute, absolute. You know, and so, see, he's reminding you what they're going to mention up there, that, you know, you go to one of these worlds and you're engaging absonite beings, ultimate beings, co-absolute beings, even absolute. You know, and it's like, wow, what the heck is that? All that stuff is, all of that is in play in the central universe. It's not just, these ascenders, you know, trying to somehow get up the scaffolding to get to paradise. I mean, there is stuff that goes way beyond the ascension scheme, all the way up to the absolute there. And so like we were saying last time, you will develop some relationship with that whole spectrum. You have to have the minimum of a relationship, the whole thing, in order to climb that up onto the absoluteness of the aisle. You know, but there's all kinds of side benefits of that. It means that when you go to one of the worlds of the spirit, you can have some relationship to all this complexity, and you can, you know, have a measure of the kind of experience he's talking about. The amazing interassociation of personality performances on all seven levels of universe reality. What a symphony of personality you'll be part of.
And what's the seven functional levels of personality? Three finite, three absolute, and one absolute.
Right. So your personality has what it takes to do this, right? it'll actually finally have a something to apply some of those higher dimensions to now, you know, when you're there. There's a limit how much absonite, you know, personality, dimensionality you need here.
But it ends with the mention of something we often dread, work.
You know, I pointed at Chris last week. I think I should point at Chris again. When you get there, you...
Feast on uncertainty, fat on discipline, enthusiasm on
faith. Right, right. You love it, you know?
Love it.
You know? Give me real work. I can hardly wait. Yeah, you're way over, you know, your animal origin legacy. Okay?
That's not dull.
That doesn't like work. You're just, you know, delighting in, you know, in having work that is neither futile or unreal. Finally, you know, you've got some real substance, you know.
They're talking like adventure. When you think of work, are you really thinking of adventure? Probably not, but this kind of work is.
Yeah, and that transformation of consciousness is obviously going to be really helpful. So that when you know when you read, one must do something as well as be something. That doesn't sound so horrendous. It's like, can I just you know be loved by God? Well, you know that's your animal origin being you know not wanting to work. You know, yeah, yes you can. But you know soon, not too far down the road, you're going to fall in love with God's work. Real work.
The thing that's so unattractive is that it's all just in order to continue to survive in a life that we know is doomed to end in death.
So you have two choices here. Either you can take it up a notch. I mean, you know, there's an easy way for you to not see your work here as futile. You can go down. You can dumb your consciousness down where you don't have enough spiritual consciousness to see its limitations. You know, and a lot of people do that, various ways of dumbing down your mind so that you don't feel it's futile. Or you could go up. Try going up instead of down. You know, don't dumb your mind down.
But death is a doorway. The work that Jesus did in many people's minds was rather mundane, but he was not mundane in the way he went about doing
it. Right, right. He did the most mundane thing well. It conformed to the cosmos, yeah. All right. Thank you so much. Let's take a moment here.